Welcome to Classic Comedy of Old Time Radio. I'm your host, Ron Eckelbarger. Fear not, Bob Hope is on the way. This is episode number 415, and it originally aired on April 19th, 1949. I have to apologize for the audio quality of the show today. I searched high and low for a better source file, but could not find one. I tried to improve it as much as I could, but one can only do so much. Also, this recording cuts out Doris Day's songs for some reason, so today's show is really lacking. I do hope that you will still enjoy Bob Hope with his special guest, Jimmy Durante.
The four hits and a miss, the Les Brown Band, and yours truly, High Averback.
We get a better break with fun, how about you?
How about you?
Who, me?
Yeah, are you an Easter bunny?
No, I'm an Easter chick, and I'm getting even with Rita Hayworth for turning me down. I'm going to fly over her house and lay an egg in Ali Khan's.
And now, Bob Hope, Swan's Eye, view of the news. Washington, D.C.
The 1949 Major League Baseball season was officially opened here today as President Truman threw out the first ball. Well, it wasn't exactly a ball. It was a round Republican. Yes, sir. And Jane Russell was in the stands for the opening game here in Hollywood. Of course, it made everything the pitchers throw look like a straight ball. But it's sort of a silly game, baseball. That's where nine men try to get to first base, and the first baseman's a man. The flag-raising ceremony at the Cleveland opener was delayed when they found the pennant was missing. One of the players' wives took her baby to the game and forgot to bring along a change. And I wanted to help Cleveland, so I figured out a way where the opposing teams couldn't score a run, but they wouldn't let me use a manhole for home plate. And the movie stars here in Hollywood have their own baseball team. I'm the pitcher, Mickey Rooney's the shortstop, Gene Kelly plays first base, and Sidney Greenstreet's the stadium. We finally had to let Sinatra play. He got tired of being the bat. But Sinatra should never play baseball because his blood is too thin. Last week, somebody spiked him as he slid into home, and he rained all over the catcher.
Detroit, Michigan.
The National Automobile Survey here disclosed that 15,000 trailers took to the road as the annual caravan of tourists started across the country. Hollywood's really loaded with tourists. I took a walk down Hollywood Boulevard and signed so many autographs, my coin changer was red hot. And a lot of people are traveling in trailers today. A trailer, that's kiddies. Your mother won't be back for a while. She stepped out in the backyard to hang up the wash, and I forgot we were doing 50 at a time. Yes, sir, everybody's traveling, and I'm going on tour this week. I got the traveling urge from my uncle. He went through 48 states in 27 days. He could have gone faster, but a posse was chasing him. He was carrying a horse under each arm. And on my last trip, I... That sneaks up on you, doesn't it? And on my last trip, I stayed at the biggest hotel in Texas, the Shamrock, and that place is really big. When I came in, I saw the bleached bones of a skeleton laying in the lobby. The poor guy got lost trying to find the washroom. I like to travel because I was in vaudeville. I did an act with a trained seal, and the seal was so smart, I used to put a vest on his fat little tummy and a toupee on his head, and he'd sing. I never knew what happened to him until last week when I heard the Philco show. On my last tour, we stopped in Kansas City, and I slept in the same bed President Truman uses when he's there. I got him sleeping in bread. That kid's eating cake now and liking it. I slept in the same bed President Truman uses when he's there. The bed was kind of lumpy, though. No wonder. Underneath, Drew Pearson. Okay. How
California.
The Motion Picture Association announced here this week that the number of drive-in movie theaters in America had more than doubled in the last year. Yes, sir, those drive-in movies are really catching on. Drive-in movies, that's where every car is a balcony. When I go to one of those drive-in theaters, I like to park my car right down close to the screen. That way, Charles Boyer's lower lip washes my windshield. Two tourists out here in Hollywood passed a new drive-in movie, and one exclaimed, "Hey, Myrtle, look at the used car lot." And the other answered, "Yeah, things must really be tough. Now they're selling them with people in them." Caught one guy cheating in a drive-in theater. He drove in with a new Buick with his three kids under the hood. They were watching the picture through the porthole. And I don't know if those romantic pictures have any effect on those automobiles or not, but one guy got out to buy a candy bar, and when he came back, there was a note from his car that said, "I'm sorry, but I ran away with a cute little Pontiac. I know it was impetuous, but I'm a convertible, and I blew my top." One guy I know drove into a drive-in theater, forgot to put his brakes on, and smashed into the screen. It was a very novel effect. Joan of Arc leading the French army to battle in a 1949 Chevrolet.
And now, the question of the week. Have you discovered why you get a better brake with Swan? Have you broken a cake of Swan in two? That's the way to prove Swan gives you a better brake. Yes, it's true. The inside of the cake tells you that Swan is the best soap afloat, that you get a better break with Swan.
Just break a cake and see.
Well, sure, just the way I'm breaking a cake right now. There, a smoother break. Now I press the inside of the cake. It's firm and solid, not soft and spongy. Then I press the edges. Again, firm and solid. No wasteful, crumbling edges, no matter how hard you press. That proves Swan will last longer. It's more economical that you get a better break with Swan.
Just break a cake and see.
And, ladies, Swan is better because it's made by an exclusive patented process that no other floating soap can use. So buy some Swan soap tomorrow. You'll discover that for dishes and your hands, for bath and for baby, you get a better break with Swan. To prove it,
just break a cake and see.
The current Warner Brothers picture, My Dream Is Yours, gives our singing star her material for this spot. And here she is, Miss Doris Day.
That big United Airlines plane is all warmed up, ready to take Bob and the cast on his personal appearance tour. Now, Bob's an intrepid flyer. He doesn't even wear a parachute. In case of an emergency, he just pulls a ripcord, which pumps air into his shoulder pads, while two wheels slowly descend from the seat of his pants.
Oh, Bob, it was nice of you to pick me up so I could drive out to the airport with you.
Oh, glad to do it, Doris.
Say, are you going to rent out your house while we're gone like you did the last time?
No, not the house, just the swimming pool. I rented it to Phil Harris.
Well, why does Phil Harris want a swimming pool?
He needs a bigger place to mix martinis.
Oh, that's silly.
No, it isn't. He puts in 3 parts gin, 1 part vermouth, and stirs it with his guitar player.
Bob, with the pool that big, how does he get the proportions right?
Well, when it's all mixed, he throws in a cocker spaniel, and if it comes out a Mexican hairless, that's it. Hey, but Doris, isn't it thrilling to be making another personal appearance tour?
Yes, Bob, but you know, I think you work too hard on these kids.
No, I don't think so, no.
After all, you sing and you dance and you tell jokes, that ought to be enough.
What do you mean?
Well, during the intermission, do you have to run up and down the aisle selling popcorn?
Well, I make 10 cents on every sale, and it's mostly all profit. You see, I save money by not using bags.
No bags? Well, then how?
I just tell them to hold out one shoe, and I pour.
Gee, haven't you had any complaints?
Only from one woman. She said I got too much salt in her Blue Jay corn plaster. For this tour down south, I just bought a brand new joke that'll kill them down there. When anybody asks me where I'm from, I just say, Shamokin, Pennsylvania.
Shamokin? smoke and wake up.
That's where they make the smoking tobacco. Joyce, don't you get it? Smoking tobacco. I bought that joke from one of Les Brown's musicians.
Which one?
You know, the smart one, the one who sits there throwing up peanuts and catching them in that hole in his head. When his head gets half full of peanuts, they shake it for a rumbus. Sharpen so you can clip hedges. I'm waiting for television.
Say, by the way, Mr. Hope.
What?
Well, I know that you don't think too much of my singing voice, but I wish you'd let me sing on this trip because we're going right through my hometown.
Oh, that's funny. We're going right near where I come from, too.
We are?
Yes. Watch this door. You know, Miss Ryan, I'm from Shamokin, Pennsylvania.
Shamokin?
Yeah, that's where they make
it. Oh, I know where it is. It's right near that little town of Shewing.
Shewing? Where's that?
That's where they make Shewing tobacco.
I hope we're not late.
The United DC-6 that will carry the Bob Hope Swan Show is now ready to leave on runway 5.
Come on, everybody. We'd better hurry.
This plane is taking off at El Paso, Waco, and College Station, Texas, Freeport, Chattanooga, and other southern towns. We are holding the plane now for the arrival of an important passenger.
That's me.
The important passenger is Albert. We can't leave for the south without Albert.
Well, who's he?
Prince Albert. He makes all the smoking tobacco.
I got a talk to one of the Les Brown's musicians. I'll be right back.
Doris,
tell me. Now,
will you...
I know how. You want me to break a cake of swine to you right here and now and prove that you get a better break of swine.
Well, not exactly, Doris. I thought we'd prove it together.
Together,
huh? Sure, here. Now, let's break this cake of swine together.
Okay.
You hold one half, I'll hold the other. Now, we break it. Like that. Now, tell me what you see inside the half you're holding.
Well, I see the same thing I always see. Every time I break swine into it, half. It's really firm, solid soap all the way through.
With no wasteful, crumbling edges. Yes, Doris, when you break swan, you see instant proof that you get a better break with swan. Then press the inside of the cake, never soft and spongy. You can feel how firm swan is. A better break for thrift. Swan lasts longer in the dishpan.
Introduce tonight's guest, one of America's favorite people and mine, too, that well-dressed man, Mr. Jimmy Durante, in person. Tonight.
And why not, Robert?
You'll notice I'm using a maiden name. You know, I'm in the pink. Why, I feel like a 20-year-old boy.
And now all you got to do is convince a 20-year-old girl. Well, it's sure nice.
It's sure nice having you drop in on us, Jim.
Thank you, Bob. And while I'm here, I think it's time we cleared up a false impression.
You mean?
Yes. Ladies and gentlemen, in spite of the fact that Bob Hope and I have the same facial characteristics, almost 12 inches long.
Jimmy Durante is not my father.
The truth of the matter is, Junior, my nose is much more attractive than yours anyway.
How do you figure, James?
Well, your nose goes along for quite a ways, and just when it starts to get interesting, it drops off. My nose continues to the bitter end. And then some.
Well, Bobby, James, how does it feel being together with us on our show again?
Robert, this nostalgic reunion typifies the gregarious characteristics of our vocation. That means that brings two pedestrians together in such an aesthetic and momentous occasion.
You took the words out of my mouth.
Well, open up and I'll throw them back in. They ain't doing me no good.
Yes, sir.
This is the only guy I know whose English isn't housebroken.
Tell me, on this trip of yours, what is going to be your itinerary?
Itinerary?
Punk must be shaking hands with Wagner tonight.
On College Station, Freeport. What joke are you working on, honey?
Have you drawn my box?
Yes, sir.
Well, so in my under. underwear. While I'm in there, I'd like to rinse out a few untouchables. So the bath shouldn't be a total loss.
I came in to tell you, sir, that Robert Carlyle Poonington the Third is here to see you. May I take your hat, sir?
Yes, just put it in that cell.
Oh, there you are, James. Hello, Robert. I've been missing you at the polo matches. What have you been doing with yourself? And that's a straight line.
Things, Monte Carlo for the gambling season, Long Island for the yachting season, and Pomona for the orange-picking season. Nice day there.
Okay, there, James, your fountain pen must be leaking. There's ink all over your cheeks. Oh, that's not ink, Robert.
No?
No, I cut myself shaving.
Lavender blue, aren't you a dilly-dilly? Say, I'll tell you why I'm here, James. I hear that while I've been out of town, you've been running around with my girl, Doris, and I want you to stop. I think that's for the girl of the tag, Junior, and she'll be here in a few minutes.
Oh, no.
That's funny. I didn't even hear the phone ring.
Oh, it's so good to see you, James, you handsome, adorable, curly-headed young Adonis.
I can't help it, folks. It's been like this ever since I started putting a dab of taboo under each nostril.
Oh, James. James, I've counted every moment I've had to be away from you.
And that's just his nose. Where does he get to his lips? That is true, Doris. You want James.
Oh, I'm sorry, Robert. It has to be.
Yes. Doris and I will be married in June. And for our honeymoon, we're going to India to live on my teakwood plantation. You must drop in sometime and join us in a cup of tea. Doris, what is there in Durante that you love so much?
Well, it's certainly not his looks or his money, and it's certainly not his mind.
Well, what is it? I'll play the piano, and Doris will explain. Stuff is hiding from Durante.
Ladies and gentlemen, the baseball world got a big thrill today when the Major League opened their 1949 season. And if you want another king-size baseball thrill, open up a terrific new book entitled The Cleveland Indians. This book has not been banned in Boston. In fact, even the Braves are buying it. Because no matter what side you're on, if you love baseball, you'll love this new book, The Cleveland Indians, written by Franklin Whitey Lewis, famed sports editor of the Cleveland Press. Well, folks, no more home games for the Swan team for the next couple of weeks. Tomorrow afternoon, we're playing Waco, Texas. And tomorrow night, Texas A&M. Thursday afternoon, Shreveport, Louisiana. Thursday night, Little Rock, Arkansas. Friday afternoon, Columbia, Mississippi. Friday night, Birmingham, Alabama. Saturday, we're in Chattanooga. Sunday, Asheville, North Carolina. And Sunday night, Charleston, South Carolina. Next Monday night, Winston-Salem, North Carolina. Next Tuesday, Richmond, Virginia. I won't say this is a tight schedule, folks, but if a DC-6 zooms over your house towing a laundry bag, that's us. We'll see you tomorrow in Waco.
Jimmy Durante was the guest on Bob Hope's show on our podcast back on April 15th of this year, 2020. You can go back and listen to it if you want to hear his mini bio. What I would like to spend this time on is to talk about an email that I received from one of our listeners, Peter H. from Connecticut. He writes, "Hello, I'm catching up and just listened to the Hope Stalin sketch show. I very much appreciated your post-show commentary. One historical reference I wonder if you can elaborate on towards the end. Hope mentions a cardinal somebody saying that if something like that ever happened, Uncle Sam wouldn't take it lying down," or something to that effect. "If you can, I'd welcome any fleshing out you might give. Thanks and kind regards." Well, thank you, Peter, for listening. Good catch on Cardinal Medzinski. I don't know if I'm... Menzenti. I'm sorry. Cardinal Menzenti. There we go. All right. So this is from our podcast that aired on November 12th. Here is what Bob Hope said at the end of his show. He was talking about touring the United States and what a great country it was. And this is a quote here now from Bob Hope. A country where the kind of thing that happened to Cardinal Menzenti would have to happen over Uncle Sam's dead body. Now, here is what he was referencing. This is from history.com, and I quote, on February 8th, 1949, Cardinal Joseph Mazinski, the highest Catholic official in Hungary, is convicted of treason and sentenced to life imprisonment by the Communist People's Court. Outraged observers in Western Europe and the United States condemned both the trial and Mazinski's conviction as perversions and lynchings. Menzenti, sorry, it's a difficult name. Menzenti was no stranger to political persecution. During World War II, Hungary's fascist government arrested him for his speeches denouncing the oppression of Jews in the nation. After the war, as a communist regime took power in Hungary, he continued his political work, decrying the political oppression and lack of religious freedom in his nation. In 1948, the Hungarian government arrested the cardinal. Menzenti and several other Catholic Church officials, a journalist, a professor, and a member of the Hungarian royal family, were all found guilty of various crimes during a brief trial before the Communist People's Court in Budapest. Most had been charged with treason, trying to overthrow the Hungarian government, and speculation in foreign currency, illegally sending money out of the country. All but Menzenti received prison sentences ranging from a few years to life. Menzenti was the focus of the trial. During the proceedings, the prosecutors produced several documents implicating Menzenti in anti-government activities. The cardinal admitted that he was guilty in principle and in detail of most of the accusations made, but he vigorously denied that his activities were designed to overthrow the Hungarian government. Nevertheless, he was convicted and sentenced to life imprisonment. The reaction to Menzenti's conviction was swift and indignant. British Foreign Secretary Ernest Bevin declared that the trial was an affront to Britain's understanding of liberty and justice. The Vatican issued a statement proclaiming that the cardinal was morally and civilly innocent. In the United States, Speaker of the House Sam Rayburn, a Democrat from Texas, stated that the Christian world cannot help but be shocked over the verdict. Protests were held in a number of U.S. cities, but the protests did not change the verdict. The case was significant in demonstrating the depth of the anti-communist movement in Hungary. In 1956, Menzenti was released when a reformist government took power in Hungary. Shortly thereafter, Soviet troops entered Hungary to put down anti-communist protests. Menzenti took refuge in the U.S. Embassy in Budapest and stayed inside the embassy grounds until 1971. That year, he was recalled by the Vatican and settled in Vienna, where he died in 1975. Now, all of that is from history.com. You can Google that, Cardinal Menzenti. That is spelled, his last name is spelled M-I-N-D-S-Z-E-N-T-Y, Cardinal Menzenti. And that's what Bob Hope was referencing on that show. Good catch, Peter. Good piece of history that I was not aware of and very interesting. Again, as I stated in the commentary on the Stalin sketch show, it is a blessing to live in a country where one can speak out against the government or make fun of political figures and not have to worry about going to jail, as Cardinal Menzenti did in that communist country. And I do hope that our freedoms persist and continue in spite of various calls for censorship on views that people do not like. That is something we have to protect against, is the freedom of speech that is guaranteed to us in the United States by the First Amendment, and also in other democratic countries throughout the world in their various laws as well. Anyway, thanks for listening, Peter, and that's what's going on with Cardinal Menzenti. Please send your questions and comments to host@classiccomedyotr.com. Come back next Wednesday for another episode of The Bob Hope Show, and check in on Friday for the next installment of The Life of Riley. Until we meet again, in the words of Soren Kierkegaard, there are two ways to be fooled. One is to believe what isn't true. The other is to refuse to believe what is true.